Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
And you're eating your soup.
Guys, welcome back to another episode here. We got Gordo fresh from the U.S.-Mexico game last night. We wanted to jump right into it and talk about what he saw, what we saw on the tube, what Twitter's been talking about, what Instagram's been re-showing. Pulisic's bomb into the top bins. Gordo, did you see it? Did you not see it? How did it end up? What was the experience like? Let's jump right in.
And did you throw any bottles? Did you throw any bottles as well?
I cannot confirm nor deny if I threw any bottles. I almost got into a fight, that's for sure. It was one of
with Jack or with somebody else?
No, me, Jack. I had to hold Jack back. He was ready to go. It was one of the most enjoyable sporting events I had been to in a very long time. You love or hate them, Mexicans know how to be fans at a game, you know, and like be passionate and be annoying and, you know, all that kind of good stuff, which makes it fun. I mean, they outnumbered us 3-1, you know, which is always annoying to me in US on our home soil, you know? So, it had a lot of action. I thought the kids fought well, or they fought, you know, there was that aspect of it, and they fought back, and what a game from the young keeper who comes in. That was the highlight of it for me, you know, steps in. Doesn't it happen like that? It's like, you never know when it's going to happen, but when you least expect it, those are usually the performances that you'll remember forever. Right. For me, I had a couple of those. So, my boys loved it. They were into it, you know, and I thought it was really, really cool event to be there live. You know, I think you can see more, you know, of the game maybe when you're at home and they're given the replays and all that kind of stuff. But I thought it was a good back and forth match.
You don't get to feel the atmosphere in a U.S.-Mexico game. There's nothing like it, especially when the stadium is full of Mexicans.
Yeah. It was an instant classic for me. I don't know if it reaches the 2-0 win in the 0-2 World Cup with the U.S. just because it was, you know, done at a World Cup level. But for me, this was right up there with one of the top U.S.-Mexico clashes.
U.S.-Mexico, for me, I think really will reignite this rivalry. It will reignite, I think, another, I don't know, year after year after year of these players, I think, growing into a hatred for one another, but also that hatred that you guys know, also it turns into a mutual respect, and it turns into this, like, I can't wait to play in these games because I know that the person on the other side of the field is going to give everything they absolutely have to give. And those are the games you want to play in. And that's what we saw, I think, last night. That's what we saw from the fans, who I think were inspired by this U.S. generation of stars that is coming up. And I think saw a little bit more of these guys, or more from these guys, from a bite and from a just a nastiness to represent your country. And then also, you know, these Mexicans, dude, they're good. They're always good, and they're going to be good. They got some talent on their side too. So fun to see it last night. Fun to talk about it today.
Yeah, it was a meaningful game, right? And we needed a win against Mexico. We needed to, these kids needed an experience like this, where a game, although it may not have been the World Cup, it was for a trophy, and trophies matter. And these kids, you know, they stepped up and they won a big game. Does it mean that they have made it? No, it doesn't. It just means they've taken a really good step, a positive step to get the U.S. fans behind them. I'm behind them. I'm excited for the future. You know, it's going to be a good 5-10 year run with these kids with a ton of talent, man. And I'm looking forward to it. So we'll see how it all shapes up.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's start talking about something else. Maybe we'll come back to the U.S. Game a little bit later, but I wanted to bring up the Inter Miami scandal. It's been a few weeks now. You've maybe had time to kind of think about it a little bit. They were fined $2 million. They had, you know, five DPs when they should have only had three. You know, they underreported a few players' salary, which, you know, I know you and me and all of us have heard stories of players getting paid, you know, under the table. I don't think that's something that maybe the common fan doesn't know about, but I think we know as MLS players that that happens more often than people realize. Was the fine too big, too small? Did, you know, Paul McDonough take the falling knife for everyone, or I forgot the other guy's name that was in charge, but what's your opinion on that, Dan?
I think you said a lot there, and I think I agree with a lot of it. All at the same time, it's probably tough to say that Paul McDonough was not, you know, clearly the orchestrator of this, but I highly doubt he was the only one involved that knew what was going on. I mean, it seems impossible that that would be the case. I thought it was interesting that what's Beckham's title? Is Beckham the president of soccer? Is that what his title is? Completely unscathed. I thought that was interesting. I thought that when these deals were being made, every single person in the soccer community scratched their head and was like, Blaise Matuidi for 300K? what are we talking about here? And this is like, MLS has had pretty fuzzy math for a long time in terms of the way that they want to operate, but the way that they have to continue to move the sport forward. And that's always been something that, you know, is just, you get frustrated by it, but at the same point in time, you know, they change and they have to adapt because they are a new young league, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to be progressive. So I think we've all probably been hit with that as we've all been in some of these CBA negotiations, and you see kind of the way that they operate. For it to come out at this point in time, though, I just thought was kind of odd. It just seemed like, why now? You know, why wait this long when all of these deals were going down? I mean, over almost a year ago now, to then come out with sanctions at this point. It just seemed like an interesting time for it to happen.
Well, there's got to be some kind of investigation, and, you know, that you got to wait for the taxes to be done. But, you know, here's the thing. I just think they weren't creative enough. This has been going on.
Yeah.
Look at the LA Galaxy and the way they were so brilliant, you know, is because they used Hollywood to pay players. You know, basically, you know, Beckham's deal, his original deal, he made $5 million, you know, salary, $5 million. He signed a $250 million contract because they wrapped in everything with commercials and appearances and everything else. And they did the same thing to Ibra. Ibra's getting $1 million, I heard, you know, for every appearance he did on late night talk show, you know. And that's how they said, listen, this is what we're going to give you for soccer. We're going to give you $25,000 a year, and we're going to get you every appearance and every commercial under the sun, and you're going to make a fortune. So they weren't creative enough for me. But it's been
so let me ask you this, Gordo. Do you think that MLS did not know about those things? Like, do you think the league office didn't know that that was going on, and you think they maybe just knew about it this time? Or what do you mean? Because I agree with you. They clearly got caught, right? And they got caught in a way that just seems like, well, isn't it kind of like wink, wink, nod, nod, yeah, don't do it. This isn't okay. And then they're on their way, and it's happened. I don't know. I think, it just seems like, how is this a foul at this point?
No, I just think, I think that, you know, you have to give the Galaxy credit for being super creative. They were the outlier where it came to pushing the boundaries, and they were under cap. They were within the cap, and they got creative on how to pay their players. I don't think that. I think the MLS knew everything.
Right. So do you think that Miami just wasn't? You just think they
Maybe they weren't like compliant. Like maybe they just weren't working with the like. You know what I mean? Like maybe MLS was like, look, you got to do it this way. Look, if you're gonna do this, you know, you got to get more creative. And they were just kind of like, nah, we'll do it this way.
Yeah, because my point is like Paul McDonough, he's been in the league for a really long time. He knows what's kosher, what's not kosher. He knows how to put things in an Audi sponsorship or a, you know, or whatever those things are that did fly and that were okay that you're talking about, Gordo. And that has been going on in this league. That's my point. These things have been going on in this league for a really long time. Right. So why is it all of a sudden?
I don't know.
Now the foot gets put down.
Yeah,
maybe they want it to end, and they're setting an example, and now all the other MLS teams are kind of shaking in their boots a little bit, trying to figure out their budgets for next year. And I don't know.
I mean,
I think that could be it.
It's all really speculation. None of us really know why they're going to have these sanctions against Miami. But I think to Sal's point, at some point, somebody's going to be made an example of. It goes too far and they take one more step over that line. And it's like, okay, we got to draw the line because this is going to get out of control. If you got five DPs on the roster and you're, like everybody knows, we have to do something and we'll smack you on the wrist a little bit. We'll give you a fine and you'll move on. And we're not going to do anything to Beckham's. I mean, Beckham's our boy. We need him. The league needs him. The league is not stupid. MLS, Don Garber, they are not stupid. Obviously they want to, they are a business and they want to make money. And Beckham is a major part of that. Plus he's a legend in this league and he, more than anybody else help get it to where it is. So they're not going to make a mockery of Beckham. Beckham's the face. They know that. And there's other people that are pulling the strings. And that's what it was. They're going to get a slap. They're going to move on. And then we all move on. We'll forget about it.
Yeah. You know, who's not going to forget about it? Miami. Because Miami is in an unbelievably tough spot moving forward with their cap and the restrictions that they put on their cap with the dollars. They're in some trouble.
Do you know what that looks like?
I want to say, and I could be speaking on my ass right now, but I want to say that they lost like $2.5 million in
cap,
in GAM.
Oh, wow. That is a lot.
In allocation money. It was not a small amount. So yeah, they have to pay a fine.
The fine was $2 million, but I don't know what it was.
That's allocation. Nothing. Yeah. The cap restrictions is what's going to get them moving because they have to be successful, dude. Miami is not known for having a loyal fan base. You look at even the Heat, when they win, yeah, everybody goes, but
there you go. Otherwise. Inter Miami's allocation dollars for 2022 and 2023 reduced by $2.27 million.
That's a lot. That's three players.
That's a lot of money. And that's why I'm saying like, that's where, so I get what you're saying and not getting creative. And I just think the timing of all this seems just kind of interesting because as a league, you need Miami to be successful and you need Miami to win and to find ways to get these players in and to get results. And they already blew a year, right? They were terrible. And now they're essentially blown it up again in terms of restarting. You bring Hendo in, who's obviously, one of the most polished figures in this league. And he's been in Seattle studying it, and building on that side of things, but he's got to now find his own staff. He's got to find his own players. He's got to do all these things. Now you're bringing out a new coach with new ideas, new philosophy, new, all these things. And it's like, okay, if this is, if this is the point in time that we're going to do it and we're going to handicap you with significant dollars that are going to be coming out of your pockets. It's just like, I hear what you're saying, and you need Miami to be successful and you're not really putting them in a very good situation to be successful, or maybe it's a much tougher situation to be successful.
So what are you saying? What's the conspiracy theory?
That's what I'm saying. I don't know. That's where I think the whole timing of it where like, okay, well, yeah, like this was a problem or this is an issue, but there have been problems and there have been issues in the past where it's like, how do you get Ashley Cole for $200K? Or how do you like, How do you get the guys that are in this league? And to your point, you're absolutely right. They're creative and they've been creative.
They'll get creative when Messi wants to go to Miami in a few
Why
years.
Why all of a sudden is the work that Miami was doing in the ways that they've, you know, I'm assuming found creative loopholes in whatever they assume to be creative loopholes. Now they're not okay. I thought it was interesting timing.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
but you're right. Well, I mean, don't really know. We don't know the whole story. So
it is. It's all speculation, but the MLS has been known to bend rules to make the league grow. I mean, LA mm-hmm. did it. They had they allowed one DP. And then when Beckham came, oh, hey, new rule, we're going to allow two. And then, you know, basically,
then you can trade DPs, then you can do this,
you know, like, listen, and it's a growing league. So I'm not saying that the MLS does whatever they want, because they do, they do whatever.
But it's kind of necessary. It's a little bit necessary
and
then, though.
You know, and it does make it very, very weird, Dan. It does make it very weird. And when this 30 for 30 comes out, it's going to be a good one, because I think there's a lot of dirt. There has to be a lot of dirt for the MLS to come out and do that to one of their babies that they need to grow. You know, this is, they're not watering their plant right now. And it's like the most crucial time. You know, they'll die. You know, that market will die. If they can't win games, dude, people will stop showing up, because that is a...
When's their stadium supposed to open? Their real stadium?
I don't know.
Next year?
Is it 23? Is it 22?
Honestly, I don't know. Yeah.
I didn't
are they not in this? Where are they right now?
They're in
Lauderdale. Fort Lauderdale. Okay.
Yeah. They built that stadium as like a temporary bridge, essentially, to get to this, like, I mean, Disney World of professional sports complexes.
Yeah.
Well,
crazy.
All right. Well, moving on. So, you know, obviously there hasn't been MLS the last few weeks. These were the final power rankings, you know, given from the MLS website going into now this week. Okay. So I want you guys to give me, I'm going to give you the top five, and then I'm gonna give you the bottom five. And I want you to tell me who's the phony out of one phony out of the top five and one bottom feeder that you think has a chance to turn it around. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So the power rankings were Seattle, the number one, Seattle, New England, Philly, NYCFC, and SKC. Out of those, who do you see as being a phony?
SKC. All day.
Yeah.
He took the words right out of my
All
mouth.
Day.
Yeah.
They're so
we got good. A lot. We got a lot of Sporting Kansas City fans in this podcast,
dude. All
that aren't going to be happy to hear
they
that.
They should know. They should know. I'm sorry, but you guys are pretty during the regular season when it's all nice and everything is the way you want it, dude. But you cannot win when it matters. You're not built to be a winning playoff team. I'm sorry.
I mean, they did win, in 2013. They won Open Cup a few times. So
yeah, that's fine.
I'm not going to go that far with that. Well, actually, Gardo, keep going. Keep doing yourself.
No, that's fine. That's fine. And if you can't admit it, then you're blind by love, and that's fine. But listen, for as good, yes, they did win. But as good as they have been over the last 10 years to only have one championship, I think that is a failure. They have been one of the best regular season teams in the last 10 years, and they've put themselves in position to go far in the MLS Cup, and they can't do it. They always seem to find a way.
If that's how you feel about Sporting Kansas City, I'd like to hear your opinion on Red Bull, because they have been very successful and haven't won a trophy in their career.
No, what has KC also won? Huh? KC's won a couple of Open Cups as well.
They've won a few Open Cups as well, yeah. They won in 2017 Open Cup, and they won in 20, maybe 12.
Yeah. So those guys have some hardware. I don't know if there's a better small market franchise than Sporting Kansas City. I think that I am.
I didn't say they weren't.
Well, yeah, you kind of.
No, did. I didn't. I said they couldn't win the big game.
You said they were a failure because they've only won one championship.
Yes, I didn't say that they weren't a good small market franchise. Okay, so don't put those words in my mouth. All right. So go on. Go ahead.
It's okay. We record this, so I don't have to put any words in your mouth. You already said it for yourself.
They're a good stock market franchise. Fuck. Hey, look. Shocker alert.
Well, I think Peter Vermees is one of the best at building a roster, but I think they're in rebuild mode. And I think that they lost too many of significant players that kind of carried them through that time. And you're not as consistent enough. I love Johnny Russell. I think he's a player. And I think he's.
Let me just say, correction. They've won 4 U.S. Open Cups and 04. 04 was okay. That's a little bit. That's you can't deep. Really bring that up. Yeah, but they won 2015. So 2012, 2015, and 2017.
Yeah, and a cup in what? 2013?
And 2013. Oh. So, I mean, almost a trophy every year up until 15. Yeah, they didn't win it.
There you go.
Sorry, I just had to go throw up.
Still an idiot. Anyway.
Gordo, I don't know if you were here. You walked away for a second, but they won in 2015. They won in 2015 as well. So 12, 15, and 17, they won Open Cup.
Yeah. MLS Cup and 3 Open Cups. Okay, yeah, open you're a Muppet. Anyway, I think that there's too much going on. You lose Ike, you move Beisler. You got Busio, who's going to move this summer. You got some incoming stuff in Polito, who I think is a decent player, but I don't know if he necessarily fits in their scheme. I don't know. I just don't see him. I think it was a little bit right in like the playoff time. Like, are they going to be able to do that when they get there? And I wouldn't put them in the same category as the other 4 teams that you mentioned.
I will say this. Peter Vermees has been, you know, and sometimes it's bit him, but other times he's sold very high on players. Cause I think, like you said, it's a small market team. And so he's trying to get the best value out of his players. Right. So he sold Dom Dwyer for at the time, a record fee of 1 mil. And, you could argue that was Dom Dwyer's height of his career, right? He got rid of Ike Opara, which that bit him in the ass a little bit because he, you know, turned Minnesota around defensively and SKC started struggling from there. You recently saw he got rid of Beisler, who, you know, is Mr. Kansas City. He got rid of Aurelian Collin kind of at his height a little bit too. I mean, I think he's kind of had to, right? He's not a team that can kind of just rest on its laurels and let these guys kind of fade a little bit. So yeah, sometimes it'll bite him, but other times, yeah.
And that's the nature of the business. You have to know when to sell. And Peter's, I think, very good at knowing when to sell. Yeah. I just think that you're in answering your question. I think that they are punching above their weight for this group because I still think that there's a lot of learning curve that this group has to go through to be at the top when it's all said and done.
Fair enough.
It took you a long time to make my point for me, so thank you.
And to be fair, in my opinion, out of those 4, you could argue them. I'm not necessarily sold on NYCFC yet, but that's just kind of where I'm at. I just don't see them being kind of a team that can make a run in the playoffs, but we'll see. All right, bottom 5. They are FC Dallas, Inter Miami, Vancouver, Chicago, and Cincinnati. What team do you feel like can dig themselves out of that hole?
What were the first 2?
FC Dallas, Inter Miami, Vancouver, Chicago Fire, or Cincinnati?
I'm going to take Dallas. And I'm taking Dallas because they have the most consistent identity. I think that they've, you know, similar to what we're talking about with Kansas City, they have, they've moved some players on, obviously some big sales, some big moves, some big transfers, but it's part of their ID and it's part of who they've become under Lucci Gonzalez. I mean, Lucci Gonzalez has really given that franchise another step. You know, you have Oscar Pereja who did great things with the club and Lucci steps in as a relative unknown, but knew the organization from top to bottom, built the academy, and then stepped in and did, I think, really special things with some of their youngest players. So I wouldn't expect to see them there much longer.
Yeah. Go ahead, Gordo.
I hate to agree with Gargs. That was going to be my pick as well. I just think, you know, you look at, for me anyway, you got to look from as a franchise as a whole, some of these instances. And I think they have a solid foundation, you know, with the youth academy. They do really well at growing, you know, their homegrown players, and they have an identity. So, you know, I will agree with him. And then you look at some of the other clubs, you know, we just talked about Miami, how they're going to have a tough road, you know, and Chicago, I think they're still rebuilding, you know, they're still in this major, like, identity crisis, right? Like who are they and who are they going to be? Everybody, you know, everybody wants Chicago to get back to the old Chicago and have that where they had that identity and they were mean and really good. But right now there's just been so much movement, front office, ownership, new coaches in and out, new players. It's just, you know, they got a lot of building to do. Not saying that what they got going on right now is not on the right trajectory, but it's just going to take a little bit more time. I don't see them making a run this year. You know, in Cincinnati, you know, from, I'm not going to pretend to know too much about them, but they just don't seem to have it figured out. I've talked to some of the players over there and, you know, it doesn't seem like they have those roots in that system that's going to do well.
I will say this. So for me, I'll probably agree with you and say FC Dallas. I mean, the heat of the summer hasn't even come yet, and you guys know what those home games are like in Dallas. But I will say, I think Cincinnati somehow can dig themselves out of it, and I don't know if it's a coaching change what they need or something to shake it up, but they certainly have the players, right? I think when the salaries got released, they have one of the top paying salaries budgets in the entire league. So I think they have the players. Maybe it's a coaching change and maybe that'll bring them up. I don't think Vancouver, Chicago, you know, has it in them this year. Inter Miami, obviously they have some talent there, but I think the whole organization is a little shooken up there as well. So I'll go with Cincinnati if they change their coach.
Change their coach?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. At what point in time do you think that might happen?
I honestly, really soon, I think. I mean, who would you say is on the hot seat out of any MLS coach right now?
Everybody in the bottom
five. I don't know if I would say anybody. Anybody really? Is on the hot seat at the second. I mean, coming out of the year that you've had in 2020 and heading into this, just from like – from a cost standpoint, like, are they going to throw away millions of dollars to get rid of a coach, to bring in another coach to start over in this year when all they really care about is getting people back in the stadium?
Yeah.
Well, that's a big part of it. You have to win games to get, you know, for most markets.
I mean, that's a team that invests a lot of money in their players. And if their coach is not getting it done at an early stage, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know their identity. Do you?
I think it puts the pressure on these coaches. You know, I think
he's been there. Wasn't he there halfway through the end of last year, or even even towards the beginning? Right.
Don't worry about winning games. Just assess for the next 12, and exactly. We don't really care.
So he's been there over a year, and I couldn't tell you their identity. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you their identity. Seriously.
Yeah.
And they have good players. I
mean, to what you were saying earlier, Sal, like, spending the most money doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to win it. And no, they have spent a lot of money, and I still think that they're missing a couple pieces. I was actually in their stadium to watch the opener, which their stadium is absolutely gorgeous. And it is, I mean, it is awesome. It's an awesome environment. So they'll get fans, and I don't think they're too far off. But I do. They're still missing a couple holes on that field. Who's that from DC? Lucho. Acosta.
Acosta.
My goodness, he's amazing, dude. Yeah. He is unbelievable.
I mean, I brought him up when we had Ben on our show, and I told you the story with Wayne Rooney. Oh, we lost Alan. But I said the story of Wayne Rooney saying he's one of the most talented players he's ever played with. So.
He's unbelievable, dude. And he is like miniature. So back to what you're talking about with Giovinco.
Yeah.
He's just like this tiny dude. He's so tough and he's so tough to defend. Did you play against him? You played with him?
I played against Acosta and against Giovinco. Obviously Red Bull, a little rivalry between DC. So yeah. And he was no joke. I mean, he got after it. Yeah.
They were tough.
If they had a better team at the time, I think he could have obviously done more damage. But just on an individual basis, he was real quick, really good dribbler, really good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was fun to watch there. They're still the kid, Joe Zhao is playing right back for them. Okay. Which like to your point about what's their identity, he's not an outside back. So he doesn't read the game in how to like get forward. He's clearly an attacker, right? But he doesn't, you know, he doesn't use his ability to attack because he's so concerned, or it seemed like he was so concerned at defending and getting that part right. And they just had these big holes all over the field. And their spacing was off, and it I don't know. They got burned from, you know, from the Higuaín's.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. All right. Welcome back, Alan Gordon. His puppy chewed through his power, so he is joining us via his phone. So,
we're definitely taking or keeping a top 10 Gordo excuses by the
end of the year. Don't get me started. You guys have the most excuses. All right, I'm always down, but this is
I'm living. We'll go next topic. And by the way, that happened to me like 4 months ago, so I know your pain. All right, so the last couple topics we'll talk about, so MLS is trying to create a U.S. sanctioned third division league. I'm assuming it's for all their, you know, LA Galaxy 2s and you know, Tacomas and whatever it is, you know, Atlanta United 2s, things like that. So I just want to know what your opinion on that was, and do you think that's a good idea?
Aren't they in the second division right now? So
they're in the second now, but I'll tell you, you know, obviously it's hit or miss. You know, Red Bull 2 has been good historically for a number of years, but you know, they just lost 7-0 to Hartford over this past weekend, and it seems to be trending in a direction where a lot of these teams are starting to struggle a little bit at this level, especially when the MLS teams are trying to go a little bit younger, bringing in a lot more academy guys, you know, 18, 17, 18, 19 year olds playing against, you know, men basically. I personally think it's a good idea, to get them in their own kind of league and let's call it the third division and go from there.
I think it's a horrible idea. I think there could not be a worse idea.
Let's hear it.
Spend the time and the money to develop this league. Okay. If it doesn't matter, we're going back to Garg's argument about the Olympic guys and giving them an excuse saying it's a youth tournament, right? I mean, if they're ready to be pros, I mean, get guys that are ready to be pros, develop this league into something that, you know, it needs to be in order to get us some kind of relegation and promotion system.
But Alan, you could argue some of these guys aren't pros yet. Like some of these guys will play in the USL and their teams will get smashed, you know, 5-0. And then in 2 years, they'll go to college because they haven't been getting paid by these academy teams yet. Right. You know what I mean? And so it's like, I don't know. I think a little talent drop would benefit them.
So what is a third? How does it? I just don't understand how a third league.
So right now there's MLS, yeah. USL Championship, USL League One, USL League Two. And they would essentially squeeze in between the championship and League One, I would assume. And, you know, a lot of MLS teams have even dropped down already to USL League One. I think Portland has, and I think a few other clubs, Toronto has, and but there's obviously that, you know, I think 5, 6, or 7 teams that haven't yet. And some do it right, but
if you don't have the talent, struggle. Why are you going to make another league? It's just going to water it down more. You know?
Yeah. Who's I mean, you could argue just send them all to USL League
send them
One
to college.
And let them.
But that doesn't work.
What?
Realistically, they should just revamp the college system. If you could play in 2 seasons in college, you'd get a lot more out of these kids.
Yeah, I agree. I actually agree with that a lot, Dan.
Completely different experience for developing talent in that 19 to 22 age range. And kids would walk out and not be completely committed to either a professional career or, you know, a GED and actually have a degree and have a meaningful experience that I think, and I mean, granted, the three of us took advantage of it. You learn an awful lot. You learn an awful lot, and you still can be a professional athlete. So I think that would be a priority, should be a priority in connecting there. But the NCAA is so problematic in so many different places that I don't, who knows if that would ever even get off the ground. But in terms of a league, I think we also all benefited from the reserve league. And this was, you know, this was predating five different USLs and all the things that were going on there. But those games were meaningful, and they got you, you know, for as much of a joke as some of them were too. They were also time on the field with experienced pros. And that's where I think this gap is. This gap is, you're playing youth and you are playing kids in an academy setup. So MLS is trying to protect those kids and give them meaningful games while also protecting their investments and cutting costs, I think, in a lot of ways. I think there's also probably, you know, this idea that they're going after the USL a little bit, I think, too, in saying like, you're not going to completely overwhelm this whole entire thing by having the lion's share of the tier and the lion's share of the hierarchy. We're going to stick our foot in this too, and we're going to compete. And maybe it is because these kids just aren't good enough yet. These academies that are still, you know, getting off the ground and getting smacked 7-0 and 5-0 and whatever that is, and not competing. But in 5 years, maybe it doesn't look like that. And it doesn't look like, you know, what we're talking about. I don't know. I also agree with Gordo. I mean, if you can't play, then what the hell are you doing? Then, you know, that's part of it. Like, you're a pro, so show up or don't. And if you're losing 7-0, then drop down a tier and own that, and own that, you know, that whatever that is, whatever you want to call it, we're investing in the youth, we're investing in our academies, whatever it is. If you're getting beat 7-0, you're not doing something right.
You know what would solve all this? Promotion relegation would just solve all of this. Who knows if it'll ever happen because of all the expansion fees and whatnot, and the owners that signed on in the MLS, I think, is the biggest issue. You know, they signed on knowing that they had that safety like every other U.S. sport. So, I just don't think you can ever convince an owner that, hey, Charlotte, that $350 million or whatever you paid to get into the MLS, well, next year you could be going down to the championship. Don't know if that'll ever happen.
And you're playing Red Bull too.
And hey, Hartford, you paid, you know, $10 million to get into USL. Well, you can go and become MLS and be worth, you know, $710 million, which is what DC, I guess, was valued at. So I don't know. I think that's still a long way away, and it's in a huge, huge process. I wish it was. I wish it was that easy. You can just change it, but I don't see that happening.
Oh, no. Nah, promotion relegation never going to happen.
Yeah. All right. Next topic. Let's talk about, so Hercules Gomez, who we also had on our podcast, he recently tweeted, this was before the CONCACAF Nations Cup, that Serginho Dest is special talent for the U.S. men's national team, but he is not a great defender. He's a tactical liability. You need him on the field if you're Greg Berhalter, but where? ? What I know, Dan, we spoke a little bit about it before, but I'd like to hear your opinion again.
Is he number 21?
He's a left winger. I don't know if he's 21.
Left back winger. Number two, I thought. I don't know.
He was the one that hung Tim Ream out to dry for 78 minutes last night, or however long Tim Ream was on the field. Tactical liability, like, since when has Serginho Dest been a good defender? I don't think that's ever been a part of his MO. And maybe he is a good defender in a back four. He's out on Barcelona. I just haven't seen a ton of him where I'm like, yeah, I love this guy. Like, he does flashy stuff, sure, but like, there's a lot of players out there that do flashy stuff. And for me, I have not seen an end product where I'm like, yo, I need this kid on the field in a game against Mexico. That's probably the long story short for me. I don't think he's anything that Greg doesn't know who he is or doesn't know what he's capable of. Or I think, actually, I thought that was one of the biggest misses last night. And I was kind of shocked that it took as long as it did for Tata to expose Tim Ream. I mean, he was exposed throughout the game. But for when they brought in Yanez, I mean, it was just like, why? why have you taken this long to do this? And Tim's going to get exposed here again because he's not a good 1v1 defender out in space. And sure enough, it did. And it was just kind of like, I don't know. I thought that was pretty surprising in last night's game.
Yeah. He's only 20 years old, right? So we have to put that in perspective. And if he's good enough to start on Barcelona at outside back, you could argue he's good enough for the U.S. men's national team.
There's a couple of scouts out there that may have a better opinion than me.
Yeah, but I will say, I mean, there's also something to Barcelona being, you know, most games, 90% of their games on the front foot, right? With possession. You don't really have to be so great tactically, obviously in the big games, but when you got the freedom to kind of just go play in possession, which, you know, he is an attacker at heart from what I can see, that's going to benefit him. But I do think, you know, Greg is looking at the big picture. Like, look, this guy obviously is a special talent. The World Cup is in 2 years. He's 20 years old. Like, let's let him grow. Let's play him in meaningful games and let's see, you know, what we can get out of him.
Is Greg developing that talent or is
no,
Barcelona?
No, not necessarily. But I think he's developing him in a sense of him being in a U.S. men's national team uniform, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think you got to have, if you're starting at Barcelona, you got to give that guy run with the U.S. men's national team. Obviously, when the time comes and it's time to put him in a World Cup game and he feels he's not ready, maybe at that point you don't put him in. But up until then, I think you got to give him the run to give yourself the best chance of having, you know, a top right back in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you both said, but one thing that has always bugged me is, you know, playing somebody because of a title. You know, I want to, you know, how many guys have we played with over the years that, you know, grew up in the Manchester United youth system, and you play with them, you're like, okay, there's a reason that you know you've been bouncing around here, there, and everywhere. And I'm not saying this kid is the same, but I want to see, you know, I agree with Dan is, you know, my eye test with him last night, I thought he was a weak spot for us. You can tell he's a talented guy, but I didn't see, you know, and I didn't see the passion. And another thing that bothers me is, you know, the players that are playing outside the U.S., you know, I want to see some commitment, you know, as a U.S. fan. I want to see some heart, some desire. I'm not sure if I saw that last night. I'm not ready to write him off because, to your point, Sal, he's got to be a pretty talented kid. And you can tell that he's got something. I just didn't see a lot, you know, him affect the game at all last night in a positive way. And it did take a long time to take him out. So let's stop just playing because he's playing for Barcelona. You know, there's somebody on the bench that maybe could be more effective and is not playing for Barcelona, but, you know, he may be better for our team. You know, maybe this kid's better for Barcelona because they do possess and they do all these things and he's not getting exposed. But are we that team? Are we trying to be Barcelona as the U.S.? No, we're not that team.
Right.
We got to have.
Yeah, you see it in clubs, or not clubs, in countries all over the world that do have like real selection issues where they have three players on Barcelona, or, you know, you're dropping an Eden Hazard from the team because it just doesn't fit. He doesn't fit our tactical scheme. And that's where I think Greg is. I mean, he's one of the best tacticians that we've seen from American coaches. And Sergiño Dest, just from what I've seen, does not fit that. Our tactical approach, and it doesn't fit, and especially didn't fit with last night in leaving Ream to be the one that defends behind him. Like it was a glaring hole from minute one, and it was like, there's gonna be problems here.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening, guys. Hope you guys liked it. A little different. We'll do these from time to time. We should have a guest on the next one. But don't forget to follow us on Twitter at the Soccer Soup Podcast. And don't forget to rate us on Apple Podcasts. Those ratings really help us out, good or bad. So thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.